Thanks. And now, without further ado, I'm going to introduce our first speaker, and this is Don W. from New York.
Wow. Hi, my name is Dawn, and I am an alcoholic.
Whoa.
Okay. Wow. Today, I'm grateful to know that I'm an alcoholic. However, 10 years ago when I came into this fellowship, I'm from Bronx, New York, as a matter of fact. Yeah. 10 years ago when I came into this fellowship, I came in to get a paper signed for an outpatient program because I ended up in jail again. And there was no way I was supposed to be released. I was supposed to go upstate and do a bid, a state term, because I was on probation. And once you're on probation, and if you get caught, you're violating probation, then you have to do that original bid, jail bid. And it was a state time. And I did the foxhole prayer. I begged God in my cell the day before I went to court, let me get one more chance with my life. And I cherish my life, and I cherish my apartment. God saw fit, and I was not sent to upstate. I was released to an outpatient program. I had to see a PO once a month, and I had to, no, the judge once a month, and a PO every 2 weeks. And this outpatient program told me, you got to go to AA meetings and get this paper signed to show proof that you're coming here. And I'm like, whoa, but I did it. And I'm coming in here, I used to talk about these groups. I got to do it, the parenting group. Well, y'all told me, talk about whatever you're going on with your life. And I did that. I spoke about why I got to go to parenting group at this outpatient program, and I don't have no kids. And this lady, this lady, she spoke to me after the meeting. And today she's still a dear friend of me. Yeah. Ooh, Hermina. She turned and she asked me, have I ever... I wondered what would happen if I participated in these groups at the program. And I just and walked away, you know. And the next day I went to the program, and unconsciously my hands raised, and I answered a question, and I started participating in the program. I wasn't doing this on purpose. It was just happening, man. And I had to go back to the meeting the next day, another meeting, because in the neighborhood, everybody went to the same meeting over there by University Heights. And the next day I saw Hermina again, and I told her that I went to the group, and I participated in the program. She had only asked me the day before, have I ever wondered what would happen if I did this? And I thought it was offensive. How dare her ask me that, you know? And I walked away from her, and I had to go back to her the next day. And I didn't even want to tell her this, but I did. I told her I participated in the group. And she said, and? I said, and the group went by quicker, and it was much more funner. And I just continued doing these things, man. And I started looking at this paper I had to get signed, and it looked like a calendar because it had to have the dates when I went to the meeting. And every day I was making a meeting, and I started hearing you people talk about what happened to you when you drank. Y'all told me honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. And I had to erase the definition of honesty that alcohol gave me, because I found out it was an illusional world I was living in for so many years, and I believed it and lived it. And it was manipulating, lie, conniving. And when I came in here, I used to get over. I learned that I was stealing. I had to learn these new terms in here, man. And I was slick. No, you wasn't. You was manipulating. So I had to learn a new language. And I was like, whoa, man. And you shared about what happened to you when you drank. And this was the thing. Y'all told me honesty. I had to get honest. And when I relearned the word honesty, those words I told you when I thought I was slick, I was lying, I was manipulating when I was stealing. So I had to get with the AA language. And then when I got honest with my drink and listened to you people share what happened to you when you drank, like my sponsor used to tell me, the first word in the first step is we. We do not do nothing by ourselves, Dawn. So I had to get with you people, man, and started listening and not throwing darts in whatever you talked about. And was able to just do like this. And I found out I was identifying. Yes, that happened to me and worse. Uh-huh. And me too and worse. oh, I thought I was the only one. No, you're not unique. I had to relearn the English language, like I told you. And, you know, I found out I'm an alcoholic. I cannot drink. When I go bother, and in the Bronx, we had beer for 50 cents. I don't know if you guys do. And I learned in here that I have a disease, and there's no known cure for it. I can only arrest it a day at a time. So come to these meetings, spend an hour of my days in the meeting, and get some medicine for my disease. And what I learned in here, I had to apply it. And you told me, don't utilize, don't analyze, utilize, just do this, Dawn, do this. You have to do it. It's an action program. And you had to be grateful. That was another word I learned in here. Grateful is an action word. You have to show it. And then I had to start hanging out with you people, because when I hung out with you, I wasn't thinking negative stuff. The more I hung with you people, the more I started thinking different. Then, whoa, my behavior was changing. I wasn't doing the stuff I used to, going to the store. And, whoa, I know I can take that. And my stomach started getting this uncomfortable feeling. Then I learned that I'm regaining a conscience. Because the lady gave me a $50 change instead of a $5. And I felt so uncomfortable. But however, I kept it. And I had to come in the meeting and tell y'all about it, because it was so uncomfortable. And then y'all suggested I put $2 in the basket instead of $1. And you know, that program I was going to, the judge told me 8 months down the road, I no longer had to report. So I said, okay. And the outpatient program said, you're no longer mandated, so you don't come back. And I said, wait, let me find an aftercare. And they said, okay. And they said, let me stay in there until I found the aftercare. Then I started getting a job. I got a job doing telemarketing, keeping people on the phone, and I had to be enthusiastic. You guys told me you can do anything as long as you don't pick up that first drink, Dawn, beyond your wildest dream. You just set a goal, and you can do it. Obstacles going to come in your way, Dawn, but if you don't drink, Dawn, you can do it. And I got this job, and I stayed on this job, because they send you home if you don't keep people on the phone and have them complete survey. Then the job told me, the outpatient program told me that, called me in the office and told me, you have Aetna insurance. Aetna's paying $75. You have to pay $50 copay. So I said, I'll quit this. AA only wants a dollar in the basket, so I'll go here. Yes, I did. And I started making more meetings and more meetings and more meetings. And then I learned in here, and Living Sober is a book that you guys gave me, and I used to go to Living Sober meeting. These were two words. 10 years ago, I would never, the big book said, don't use the word never with a step book. But I thought I would not use those two words in the same sentence. Living Sober. Today, I am truly willing to do the work to continue living sober, because beyond my wildest dreams, man, I had to get a God of my own understanding, a higher power. It wasn't a God, a higher power that was no longer me, and it was no longer that 50 cent can of beer. And when I found that power that was greater than me and made the decision that, yes, I want to continue with this process, He allowed me to, and He is still allowing me to, man. And you know, I lost my mom's in this process, and drinking, it's not going to bring her back. So I didn't drink. You guys tell me, call you whatever time of the night, you be there for me. But you know, I'm considerate. I'm not going to call you at 4 o'clock in the morning, tell you how I'm feeling. Here I go again. And this was when the 11th step, the closer conscious contact with that higher power, man, because I had to like go in there, man, and like get with Him. Just like, right now, when I get up in the middle of the night just to go to my bathroom, man, I just have to, like, thank Him that my limbs are intact. I can just walk out of the bed and go to the bathroom, man. That higher power beyond my wildest dream. For me, you guys will always be there. You know, you can fail me now and again. But that higher power, man, I choose to call God. And, like, yesterday, I saw this lady, and she was, outside, and she bent over because something was wrong with her shoe. And I saw her got up, and she couldn't do it. And I got up off the chair, the bench, waiting for the bus. And I walked over to her, and I just bent down and fixed her shoe for her. And then I was like, oh, mama, my mom was like doing what I used to do for my mother. And Hermina, I just went over to her and just started crying. And she said, "Mom," and I told her how I was feeling, because you know what? They were good feeling, but they was like remembering someone, mother, and the joy. Just like the joy of living, man. Oh, man, just to like share with you people, no matter what I'm going through, and this is what Alcoholic Anonymous, the fellowship you people allow me to do, man, no matter what is going on with me, don't keep it to yourself, doing happy, joyous, or free, no matter if it's even negative, whatever you think, and share with somebody else, man. And this is what I do, man, but yesterday it hit me, man, it hit me, and I was like, whoa, I didn't have that feeling in a while, man. What? I'm only here today through God's grace, man. Today I'm no longer here to get a paper signed for that outpatient program. I'm here to maintain this lifestyle, keep a handle on my sobriety, man. Whoa. And then after this job, I got another job 2 years down the line. Everything came after a year of my sobriety. I started working for Citibank because, like I told you, y'all told me I can do anything, and I had no, I only knew how to type. Because I didn't like to erase and write and erasing in school, so I learned typing. That's the only skill I had. And they told me about a position at this bank, and I made up the resume and everything and put employment agency I used to go to because I used to manipulate them, let them find me the job. I took the test, and they'll find me the job, place me, and this job here at Citibank where I was working. Well, before I got there, y'all told me about a sponsor, somebody else that looked fairly happy because I didn't know if they had this, the 12 and 12 in their lives. I didn't know what the 12 and 12 was. So somebody that looked reasonably happy, and that lady was able to guide me through the steps, and I was able to, like, no longer when I'm talking to you, because see, since I've been standing up here talking, my head been going from that side to that because I'm learning how to communicate body language, looking at you on each side. So I learned how to like go to this lady with my resume for the interview and looked her dead in the eye and told her with, because in my heart, I knew I can do anything because y'all told me, long as you don't pick up that first drink, on you can do and achieve anything. So I looked this lady in the eye and told her what I'm capable of, how I know I can be an asset to your company if you give me the opportunity. And she saw fit, and she gave me the opportunity. And then here is the wreckage of my past. They told me 2 weeks down the aisle, you said check yes, but y'all told me, be honest. Have you ever been any crimes or anything? And I had to go get my criminal record. And for 2 weeks, they told me no work to go get that cleared up, and I wasn't getting paid. And the thinking, that's what my disease is, told me, quit. You got to go to Queens. You got to go to Long Island, Hempstead, Manhattan. And I found out where I was always getting in trouble, all these boroughs. And it was work to go get these disposition from all these boroughs and different courts. And I found out what I used to do. Oh, my gosh. And the thinking told me, just quit. Don't even bother with the job. But I didn't. Y'all told me, as long as you do the footwork. And the thinking tell me, after you do all this, you may not get the job. They may, and I had to like tell y'all what I'm thinking, continue telling y'all what I'm thinking, and I stayed with the process. I was employed with that company for 9 years, and last year, this time, they laid me off. They laid me off, and I've been living beyond my wildest dream for the last year, unemployed. Unemployed, and living beyond my wildest dreams. And for me, I'm like, the sixth tradition remind me, you put nothing before your sobriety, but I just got, my husband and I, here I go with the I, my husband and I bought a co-op, and man, I saw a commercial on TV, the wife bought the husband a grill, I utilized, y'all told me, I did the same thing, and hint, honey, you're going to be cooking for the summer, winter, and fall, because we have a terrace, and he didn't get it, and I had to like, let him, look at this commercial. Look at the commercial. And he still didn't get it. I think he was trying to, like, just play me, but I don't know. You know, like, you know, oh, man, I don't know why I said about talked about that, but, yeah. I'm going to do this up. Oh, man, I'm just like, it's just a joy. And I learned coming in here to a meeting, it's a lesson out of everything that happens in my life. I don't come into meetings with my head down. I don't come into meetings talking about the same thing this week, the same thing I'm doing last week. If I tell my sponsor about it, she gave me her experience on it or sent me to my grand sponsor. And if I didn't take their suggestion, I should not be talking about the same problem next week. Because my sponsor talked about The solution. Now that we know the problem, the solution. The solution. Get off the pity pot. Now, what you going to do about it? You know the problem. And then we opened up a group in the Bronx, Women Into the Solution. We just celebrated our six-year anniversary. It's, if you're in the Bronx, 149th Street, hour and a half meeting, 2 o'clock on Saturday, 149 and 3rd. I'm just grateful to know for a fact that, yes, I'm an alcoholic. When I pick up that drink, alcohol used to tell me, you get a twitch that I want more, and then I get a, the body said any means necessary. I found out in here. I told you all about the AA language I had to learn. I didn't get a twitch. I had a physical craving where my body said any means necessary. A mental obsession. The mind says, yes, I'm going to manipulate. Yes, I'm going to steal, rob, whatever I have to do to get the next one. Learned the AA language. I ain't got a twitch to activate this twitch in me that made me want to go, for any more, more, more. No, it's not, Dawn. It's a physical craving, a mental obsession. When you pick up a drink, take a sip of it, you activate it. So I choose not to pick that drink up because I already know the end result. Jail, institution, or death. I already know the end result. Why am I going to go bother that old bag of tricks? How it works, tell me. It will not work. Let go of those old ideas, Dawn. They don't work. They don't work. So I had to continue being willing to do the next right thing, being open, sitting up in these rooms, listening to you people, willing to let a higher power teach me how to change me, man. Long as I just, at first I wasn't able to do none of this until I got honest. Relearned the word honesty first, then got honest with my drinking. And yes, that 50 cent can of beer whooped my behind when I go bother it. I found out I never had no slips or relapse. I chose to pick it up because the beer never came and jumped down my throat. It never did. I went and bothered it. I touched it. I picked it up. I turned the top or I flipped the top. And then the booze told me the revelation when I was drinking Cisco. Oh, my God. I had a fight, and I hit somebody, and the bottle didn't break, and it was a revelation. This is my thing. Cisco. Cisco. I can fight with it. If I get in trouble with the police, I won't get an extra charge for a weapon. And yes, I would have for the bottle. But the booze told me it's no, you wouldn't. And I believe it. I wouldn't drink a 40-ounce. I would drink a quart, because a 40-ounce, I would have to hold it with both hands. So, one hand, a quart. But I didn't see none of this or knew none of this stuff about me, man, until I got with a sponsor and did some step work and learned about myself. Today, I am willing not to go back to that lifestyle. Today, I respect me as the woman I am, man. And a sip of a drink would take me back down to that gutter, into the grips of alcohol, which I choose not to. Not to. The commercials on TV, all that, the new flyers and poster, Dawn, me, I do not give my disease, which is my thinking, or not even my eyes. I don't even stop to look at those posters. I don't drink, so why am I going to look at some new poster on the wall with some new booze? No, you won't get my attention. Just for me, just for me. They have commercials on TV, all that. That's beautiful. I'm not going to sit there and entertain them. No, I don't. Flip the channel. Lucky I got remote, too. Just flip the channel. I'm not interested. Because it starts bubbling up the stomach. No. My 2 minutes are real. Well, if it's not, I'm just grateful. I know it's an honor to chosen to speak at a convention. This is a huge room. I chaired the 2007 Bill W. in New York, Manhattan, New York. And it was not this size. Well, I don't know. But it's a pleasure and it's an honor, man. And I was a little nervous and the girls in front, but I told them, no, I got my own hanky. I got my fan. I'm prepared. Y'all taught me how to do that. And I'm just grateful. This one is an honor and a pleasure to share my experience, strength, and hope. And a pleasure to meet people from all over the world. My first international convention. It will not be my last. Thank you.
you, Don.
Thank you.
And next we've got Rebecca L. from Arizona.
Oh, my. Okay. Okay. Hi, my name is Rebecca L., and I'm from Mesa, Arizona, and I'm an alcoholic. Oh, my God. Okay. I failed public speaking in college, so I passed out. Okay. I believe my name was not only parentally chosen, but it was God-given. The name Rebecca means that I live an exciting life that is shared by my family, have a very strong will in my nature. I'm humorous and friendly emotionally. My character allows me to enjoy integrity beyond compare. Physically, I'm a proud, high-spirited woman. Mentally, I'm noted for my judgment and my insight. And my motivation is that my family loves and respects me today. And I got that all in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew nothing about nothing when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. When I started to think about this talk and I tried to apply what it was like to women in AA, I just kept getting writer's block, you know, and like this brain fart, nothing would come in. So last week I was sitting and I was talking to my sponsor and we determined that it was because I really didn't have women in my life before AA. You know, I have four brothers. I learned to camp, hike, hunt, fish, shoot, gut. You know, I played baseball and football with the guys, and, you know, and I didn't get along with my mother, so I wanted nothing, absolutely nothing, to do with sitting on the front porch crocheting and knitting, and I absolutely did not want to wear a dress or learn how to wear makeup. And if she were here today, she would be so proud. I was also blessed with two male children. you know, and so the poor things. You know, I really didn't want to do a lot of parenting. I really wanted just more friends. You know, the parenting just was not a big thing for me, unless you count the fact that they raised me. I do have one grandson, and I have one granddaughter. I'm very close to the grandson. I hardly ever get to see my granddaughter. I'm one of those women that the book talks about. You know, I drank essentially because I love the effect produced by alcohol. I can remember when I first began drinking. My drinking career started out by someone was daring me to skip school. And I come from a very abusive home, so I was scared to death, you know. But there was this alcohol thing they kept talking about that was involved. And I had, you know, I had taken a few sips here and there, and the alcohol thing kept, that's all I could hear. And so I agreed, and I went and I took my first drink of alcohol underneath the bridge. And I went back for the next 5 days. And on the fifth day, the school had called my parents. You know, when you don't show up to school, I guess they call your parents. They kind of want you there. And so my parents found me before the policemen did. But they decided to take me down to the police station anyway. And my mom, you know, took my shoe off and beat me all the way to the police station. And it never got better. 5 days of drinking, I was on my way to the police station, and it just never got better. You know what it was like. You know, Don told us pretty well what it was like. You know, I visited so many jails, institutions. My children watched me get hauled away, you know, on a gurney, strapped down. And you know, I took a couple of hostages, made a couple of hostages, you know, and And I was just never comfortable. I was always on the run. I never wanted to be with just me, you know. And early in my drinking career, you know, I did have some female friends, and they, you know, they'd cheer me on because I could drink the guys under the table, you know. And so I was, like, known as this hero. Yeah, Becca, beat them, you know, let's bet them, we'll have drinking money. And, you know, eventually I still wanted to be the hero, and they were kind of growing up, and they were, you know, saying, well, maybe we should, you know, you shouldn't drink like that. We don't drink like that. And, you know, so I just threw those women out of my life. I wanted to be around the people who could drink like me. What happened was, in my second marriage, the fateful day came when he, too, wanted a divorce. I had tried to commit suicide one more time. And I guess when you don't want to live with yourself, other people don't want to live with you either. So he, you know, he just up and left. And I remember taking my son, a 20-pack of Coors Light, a bottle of Bacardi 151, some sleeping bags, and the F-250, and just heading out into the night. I had nowhere to go. I had nothing to do. And I vaguely remember that weekend. My son can give you a whole account, though. And at some point, I guess I called my father, and he talked me into taking my son back home and reclaiming my house. And I did that. And, you know, so it was Monday morning, and I got up for work like I always got up for work. And I was shaking on the inside, shaking on the outside. And I made a mixed drink of half vodka and half homemade wine in a large glass to get me through the day. And that lasted only till about 10 a.m. So I'm sitting at work, you know, doing what I normally do. And the shakes started again, uncontrollably on the inside. And I had to have a drink. I knew I had to have a drink. And my mind was wheeling about how I could get that drink, you know. What story could I concoct this time, you know. And like I said, everybody around me drank the way I drank. So I could have asked my boss if I could have had a beer up front. He probably would have been okay with it. But suddenly, something hit. Something came in. I had been, you know, sentenced to AA, had the court paper signed. None of that stuff worked for me. But something hit. And it was like right in my heart, you know, this burning arrow just went right through my heart. And I knew I was alcoholic. I had no idea what alcoholism meant. I had no idea what it meant to be alcoholic. I just heard it. I had heard enough in the rooms that I knew what I was and where to turn. So I picked up the telephone and I called the only gentleman that I knew in the program. I could remember his face because he pumped my gas every week. And so I called him and I said, I think I need a sponsor. And he said, so you're serious this time? And I said, I think I am. And I got here to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and a bunch of women stood up and came to me, you know, and one of them had her arms wide open, and I thought, what the hell did I get myself into? How can I get out of this? You know, and I sat through that meeting, and these women were laughing, and they were talking, you know, and after the meeting, they were hugging and, you know, even kissing each other on the lips or in cheeks, and I'm like, oh, God. And, you know, and I heard you all say, pick a sponsor. So I picked a sponsor, and I learned a lot from that sponsor, and she had to move away my first few months of sobriety, and then I had another woman come up and tell me that I was dying and that she could help me. And so I accepted, and I thank God today her God was way bigger than me because it helped me reach for the stars. She got busy. She got engaged, and she got busy preparing a life for them, you know, their house and their wedding plans and all that. And so by this time, I was in my fourth step, and she let me stay in that fourth step, and I wrote 3 reams of paper front and back. I don't recommend that. And finally, I knew I was still dying. And so I reached out, and I got a woman who has helped me greatly. Whenever her and I speak, there's just some conduit between the two of us, and I reach that God of my understanding. You know, just lickety-split. I can be down in the depths of hell, and I could call her, And I just reached the God of my understanding quick. Oh, now I lost my place. I'm sorry. Okay. So I had this huge, huge four-step. And in the middle of it, my mother, they had called me and told me that my mother was in the hospital. Well, I thought it was the answer to my third-step prayer. You know, I thought God was removing all my difficulties because I knew if he took her, I would be fine. And you kind, loving people told me that I got to be of service, and I thought, you are nuts. You don't know what she's done to me. I can't even tell you what she's done to me. They're like things out of a horror movie. And I got reminded, you know, I said I was willing, and how willing was I? So I went. And I actually wrote my fourth step on my mother while she was in the hospital bed lying there dying. And as I was writing that stuff, I wanted so bad to say I was sorry, but every time I'd start to say something, nothing would come out. And after I went through that huge four-step, I found out why God wouldn't let me say I was sorry. You know, there's more to an amends than just a feeble I'm sorry. I did get to write a letter and make amends to her, and I still make amends to this day for, you know, for a lot of things. Alcoholics Anonymous allowed me to be a daughter for the last 9 months of my mother's life. And that is so big that I will never be able to repay it, but I can sure take the action that it takes to show it. My father got injured, and he made it about another year and a half. And I looked up to my father, but I don't think he ever knew it. I was at a state convention, and at that time I still was one of those people that sat at the back of the room right by the door. I was afraid if I came up this close, y'all would breathe my air and I would die. And Sharon B. from California was talking, and her storyline was real similar to mine. And my home group knew it, and I couldn't come up. I could not come up here. Sharon B. actually left the people who were thanking her and came to the back of the room to talk to me. And she taught me what it means to when we say this is not just about me. She stayed in touch with me until my father passed away, and she kept urging me to go and make amends, and I still couldn't look people directly in the eye. I did finally mail the letter, and I really thank Sharon for sticking with me that whole time, because my dad passed away 2 days later. So from that, I learned that when you make amends, you look people directly in the eye, because once they're gone, you don't get another chance. So I have a lot of women in my life today, a lot of women, both in and out of the rooms. You know, when I moved to Mesa, Arizona, God put me right next door to a woman who's was an area delegate at the time. You know, and so I got to learn a lot about service, and she is the best next door neighbor anybody could ask for. You know, my sponsor Carmen lives in New York City, and like I said, you know, it doesn't matter how many miles are between us, once I call her, you know, it's the doors just open up to heaven. And I just love her to death. Thank you so much, Carmen. I sponsor women, and that is the greatest thing that I have ever done in my life. I get so much, just so much. And I didn't understand that when Carmen was telling me, but boy, once you do it, there is just nothing like it. Nothing like it in the world. It is just, it is just amazing. I mean, I cannot put words to it. I've done so many amazing things in sobriety. So many amazing things. You know, I've gone to school. I've got an MBA. I mean, when I got here, I seriously, nothing about nothing. Now I have an MBA. People actually allow me to take care of their money, and they trust me. But the main thing is I trust myself. I trust myself with other people's money. I trust myself with other people's lives. I trust myself with my life. You know, when there was a period in my drinking career where I seriously could not go out in public. And when I got that letter to speak here, I thought, there's just no way. You know, and I've even had women walk up to me and be like, you know, I want to go so bad, because if you speak more than 5 minutes, it's going to be a miracle. And, you know, I've got a lot of cool friends today. They razzed the hell out of me, and they kept telling me how big this room was and that it seats 2,500 people. And those are the people I love today. I absolutely love women in AA who walk up to me and say, "Get off the cross. We need the wood." You know, and kind, loving things like, you know, well, if you're whining, you're not working your program. What step are you stuck on? You know, and just all kinds of just kind, loving things like that. I absolutely love. Oh, here it is. Here's my favorite. Oh, poor Becca. Do you want us to wrap you in cotton and put you back on the shelf? You know, and I absolutely love Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I've heard a lot of people say that it brought back their life, and this absolutely gave me a life. I did not have a life before I got here. When I got here, you know, I was drowning. I could look up. I could see the surface, you know, and I just kept thinking if I could push high enough, I could take a breath, and I couldn't. When I got here, I absolutely could not take a drink one day at a time. There was just no way. I'd done everything. I'd had the laying on of the hands, baptized Mormon, you know, I'd exercise, I loved to run, so, you know, I had these little fanny packs where I'd put alcohol on there. Ride a bicycle, and you have to mix Bacardi, and you have to make sure you shake it up so that the fizz goes away, but Bacardi and Diet Pepsi, you know, in the bottle, and, you know, and it got to the point where I just wanted to work out at home so I could have the drink right there and plenty more in the refrigerator, you know. I did things like I'd measure the bottle, you know, I'm only going to drink this much tonight. You know, I did all kinds of stuff. You know, I tried. There was a period in my life where I didn't want to drink, but I didn't have the choice. I got here to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't know how it works. I just do what the book says. I take many suggestions, and I go one day at a time. And I'm absolutely thrilled that I didn't pass out.
Rebecca, thank you. And finally, we have Beverly C. from Florida.
Whew. Hi, everybody. My name is Beverly, and I am an alcoholic. I was so nervous when I was sitting up there, my teeth were chattering. But the good thing about sobriety is today they chatter and I'm not afraid they're going to fall out my mouth. There was a time when that wasn't so. You know, my sobriety date is October 11th, 1987. Now that I've said all of that, I can go sit down. But I am so honored to have been asked to speak. It's beyond my wildest dreams. A couple of years ago, I realized that I've been sober longer than I drank. I actually drank for about 13 years, and when I picked up the alcohol, I was never a casual drinker. I was never a drinker who just decided maybe I'll have a little drink today. That wasn't part of my vocabulary when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. A little bit about what was going on with me. I came from a family of drinkers. You know, I've heard these two ladies here talk about their moms, and it brought up some things for me, and I'm sure for a lot of women and also men, too, but especially the women, the mother issue. It's a big issue. It followed me around for most of my sobriety. But I tell you, standing here and reflecting, because they told me when I came to the rooms, I can look back, but I don't have to stay back there today. You know, and they drank and they got drunk. My mother died. She was hadn't turned 40 yet, and the disease of alcoholism took her life. Alcoholics Anonymous was in effect at that time. I don't know whether she ever heard anything about it, but she chose to drink. I didn't think that I would drink. I had all the attitudes of a young lady and a young girl whose mother was drinking, and I was very angry. So I never got to know that woman. And when I was 19, she died, and I didn't know her because she drank the whole time. That was her story. My story was that I picked up my first drink. I was about 17 years old and hanging out with a young man that was to become my husband. And my first drink was 151 rum. And I got so drunk and so sick, I swore to God, you all know what that is, get me out of this, I'll never do it again. And you know, if that had happened, I wouldn't be here today. But I didn't drink right away. It took me another about 5 years more to pick up the drink. And the year of 1969 was a year that I'll never forget. It was the year that my mother died. It was also the year that it goes like this. My mother died, but before she died, I was in high school. And in 69, I became pregnant, and I got married. My mother died, and I became a mother. All of this happened within a couple of months in 1969, so that was a heck of a year for me. And I was off to the races. Alcohol became my all in all, and at the end it was my master. You know, I usually tell a little joke, and people who have heard me, thank God that I haven't gone back out, so I haven't added to my story. I was really a known wineette. I loved wine. I didn't like the taste of alcohol. It just tasted bad. But wine, it was like Kool-Aid, you know. I'd turn that bottle up and it'd do the job. But the thing was, my intent was never to get drunk. My intent was to get nice. And like I always say, if you drank like I drank, I went from nice straight to drunk. Because I never paused and said, oh, I got a little buzz now, let me put down the drink. That didn't ever happen. I just kept drinking. And, you know, being an alcoholic at that time, I didn't realize that I would forget that I probably was drinking some other drink early that morning, and by afternoon I'd be drinking something else, and by night, if I went out, you know, you didn't go out till like after 11, and I'd be drinking whatever. And so I would lose count of what I drank. It really didn't matter to me anyway, but I always ended up drunk. And a big part of my story is getting drunk, crying, and ended up with my head in the toilet because I got sick all the time. And you want to talk about being grateful for sobriety? I really haven't thrown up since I got here. But I threw up all the time. Okay, and one lady said to me, my God, if I threw up every time I drank, I wouldn't drink. I was like, she probably, obviously she's not an alcoholic. It never occurred to me that maybe I shouldn't drink. It was always, you don't have the right combination. You got to get the right, for 13 years, I kept trying to get that right combination. And I can't tell you once when I said, oh yeah, I'm nice now. Let me just sit down and chill out. It was always more, 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 more. You know, and that's what I did. I drank, and I drank hard, and I drank. I thought that when I got there, the party started. I tell you, boy, you know how I was so great in my mind. If the party started when I got there, it ended about an hour after I was there. I don't think I made it an hour. Okay, because I would be drinking all day and getting ready, you know, and cleaning up and doing all this stuff and get to the party. I don't remember half the things that happened at the party. You know, a little joke that I usually tell about some of the things, really ain't a joke, it really did happen. At the time when I was drinking, there was a lot of house parties, you know, and I went to this house party, and I guess it must have been winter because people did have on coats. And I was at this party, and I think I took a drink, one drink. And I started feeling really bad. And so the person said, well, go lay down. Go in the room and lay down. It was still kind of early. It wasn't a lot of people there yet. And as the night went on and as people continued to come in the house, they would go to this bedroom and just throw their coats on the bed. Well, somewhere in the middle of the night, I come too. And I'm up under these coats. Now, let's not forget that I told you I always threw up. So I'd like to say I got up like a little lady and got from under those coats and went to the bathroom and pulled up the toilet seat and threw up. Well, no. I think I threw up all over the coats, the bed, the floor. Because if you think about it, to throw up is uncontrollable. Well, it was uncontrollable. And I left there that night very quickly. I don't think anybody ever kind of said anything to me. I don't think they knew I did that. I hope not. It was a very long time ago. But in all honesty, alcohol whipped me royally. It whipped my butt. Okay. It really did a job. And the whole time when I was drinking, I thought I was in control. I really did. You know, there was a time when I was drinking, I still had a job. I still had money in the bank, and I had a couple of charge cards. I was able to pay my rent, and, you know, I was playing that, you know, responsible citizen thing, you know. And then as I continued to drink and to progression, which is what happened, my life just changed completely. So no more am I popping up in the morning and getting dressed and running to work and everything's okay. And there was a time when, you know, it would be like the only time I drank is when I got off from work. Well, as the disease progressed, I started drinking at work. And, you know, as alcoholics, we become very good at what we do in work situations. And I got promoted. And how cool was that? I was working in the Wall Street area in Manhattan, and I got promoted. Now, I had already been to a therapist to be hypnotized because I knew it was something wrong, you know. I'm very nervous, and, you know, they told me, you know, smoke a cigarette. You know how long ago that was. They told me smoke a cigarette. Well, I tried smoking, and forget about my story with smoking. I'd burn up your clothes and mine, too, so you really didn't want me smoking. I don't know what was with that. I couldn't get that together. It was too much for me. It's like walking and chewing gum. Couldn't do it. And I began drinking at work, and I didn't know how to control these 21 employees that I had. And I worked in the field of food, and it was in Manhattan in a very nice building, and I didn't know what to do with them. And I was pretty respected at that time. And I got a bright idea around the holidays. You know, we work in food, and, you know, they have soda cans. And what I used to do was send out and get a couple of half a gallons of Bacardi around 10 o'clock, 10 a.m. in the morning, And my employees would line up and everybody would get a drink. Boy, did they love me. I didn't have to worry about them doing what I told them to do, because I probably wouldn't tell them to do anything because I was getting drunk. Everybody was doing what they wanted to do. And we were having a good time. I'd like to say all 21 of us was having a good time, but I think it was like 18 of us. The other three had nerve enough to not want to drink. And they were causing problems. We all walking around with, you know, Coca-Cola cans with Bacardi and some Coke in it, you know, and drinking. And I was called boss lady. And it was wonderful. And somebody complained to the boss. I couldn't figure that out, you know. And I was warned. And I apparently didn't listen to that warning. And the progression continued. By the time I got fired from that job, I no longer was hiding the bottle. And I'm not talking about a long period of time either. I don't think I was manager for too long. I think I made it 6 months, maybe. And I was let go. And at the time that I was let go because I was black and I was a woman. Okay. I had to come to sobriety to find out that I was let go because I was drunk. And it had nothing to do about being black and being a woman. I was an alcoholic. The disease had taken over by then. Now I'm unemployable. And when I'm getting jobs, I can't keep them. And the reason why I couldn't keep those jobs is because I was stealing. You know, I was stealing. You know, I was taking, it was mine, you know, and I was taking it, you know, so I kept getting fired and I kept getting fired. And then things got really bad and I was no longer employable. You know, I was no longer holding on to jobs. I was no longer able to pay my rent. Thank God my son that I have was living in Florida and I was living up in New York. And things were getting rough. The party had been over a long time ago. I had crossed that invisible line many years ago, and I was only surviving. I wasn't living. If you asked me what my hobby was, I truly told you it was drinking. Because that's the only thing that was consistent in my life, was the alcohol. A couple other things came to play, but there was always alcohol. And so I kid you not when I tell you that I came to this room of Alcoholics Anonymous because I thought I was going to die. I thought my life was over. And for pretty much from what I was doing, it was just about over. I couldn't pay my rent. I couldn't buy groceries. I was going into stores, and up north, certain people walk in stores, they used to call them cattle rustlers. They were meat markets, and I think people were going in there stealing the meat. They call them cattle rustlers. It was bad. It was bad, you know. I don't play any games about how it was when I came in here. Because if it was all that great, I wouldn't be here. If I came in here looking good and with my heels on and my rent was still paying bills. If the party was still on, I'd still be at the party. It was over long before I got here. And I am so grateful that the day before I came in the rooms, I couldn't do it anymore. I was rolling pennies, and I still had pennies. And I was rolling pennies, and my last drink was something orange called Tango. And I think it was 50 cents then. And I rolled it up. Life was bad, and I didn't know what to do about it. I didn't know where to go. I didn't have any insurance. My rent was only paid because my brother and public assistance was paying it. I was no longer capable of doing that. The day before I came, I asked God to help me. And it wasn't a foxhole prayer. I asked him to help me. And I reached out and I called the young lady who's not with us any longer and asked her for help. And I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And for that, I am so truly grateful for the chance at a second life. The life that I lived, thank God that I made it through that life, because by all accounts, I shouldn't be here today. You know, this August, I will officially be 60 years old, and I thought it was over before I was 25. So to be able to be here in Alcoholics Anonymous, to be a sober woman in Alcoholics Anonymous, living the program, experiencing the program, feeling and not running away, feeling what's going on inside, taking my own inventory, finally accepting that it's okay to be me. See, I wanted to be everybody else but me when I got here. And that didn't disappear as soon as I walked in these rooms either. It took work and it took time for me to accept and learn who I am. Because in the beginning, I began to know who I was not and then what was left. And as I began to do that inventory and write my gratitude about the alcoholic mother, even though she drank, she kept a roof over my head and my two brothers, and she kept food in our stomachs. It wasn't the life, the fairy tale life that I would have wanted. It was what life had dealt me. And I couldn't accept that for so long. It took me a long time in sobriety to accept that's what the life was. Now, what do I do about it? Do I continue to wallow like I did in the bars and complain and play the victim? Or do I stand up and say, that's what hand what was dealt with me, and I'm okay today with it, and I accept who I am, and I love me. That's what I do about it. And that what sobriety has given me. It has given me that. Thank you. Thank you. And I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful to have drove over. Well, I didn't drive that much. My husband did. We came almost like 1,200 miles, but he did the driving, and he's somewhere in the back over there. I saw him sneak in. And to be able to say that I have a husband in sobriety. I had one long time ago, and I didn't know what to do with it, so that marriage ended. You know, I'm the typical AA woman meets AA man on campus. Yes. And thank God when I did meet him, I had 10 years and so did he. We had established our own footing. Because in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's about being real. It's not about sitting up there with my arm around my husband and hanging out with him. My husband has his own group, his home group, and I have mine. Okay? Because today, I realize he can't keep me sober. Nobody can keep me sober. I make my meetings, he makes his, and we come together at anniversaries. In the town we live in, Palm Coast, Florida, people are still, we've been there almost 5 years, and people still say, oh, that's your husband? Oh, that's your wife? Because they don't see us together. You know? I drank by myself. I didn't need anybody to drink with. If he wasn't around, if I didn't know him or whoever happened to have been in my life that particular time, I didn't need them to drink. I drank by myself. And thank God they told me that I come in here and I get sober. This is about my sobriety, you know. And our God of my understanding is not he has his, I have mine. And I know that I'm worth it today. And I talk a lot about that because for a long time, I didn't think I was worth anything. And through many years of sobriety, it began to get better, that low self-esteem, but it just continues to rise and to rise, and I make meetings, and I am grateful. I am grateful to be sober. Thank you for letting me share.
About that. My name's Carla Moore, and I'm an alcoholic. And I want to thank Don, Rebecca, and Beverly so much. So much. This was not strictly a women's meeting, but we talked about women in Alcoholics Anonymous, and these are women in Alcoholics Anonymous. Look around. Oh, my God, I love the men, but women in Alcoholics Anonymous rock. Yeah.